I tell you, dear viewer, sometimes life is just straight up hard. Work, relationships, sure, that's a struggle, but then there's poverty, violence, the existential dread of living in a society. This life bullshit is really hard. Now transport all that 1500 years back in time to the century after the fall, but not really fall of Rome, and you'll approximate the angst of one Anicius Boethius. A statesman and polymath in Gothic era Italy, Boethius found himself accused of treason and thrown in jail to await execution. But when unavoidably confronted with the fact that life is hard and also extremely bullshit, he took that feeling and, recognizing there would be no miraculous escape or sudden change of heart by the king, he consoled himself with the one thing that could actually save him: philosophy. While in jail, he composed the aptly titled Consolation of Philosophy, a treatise on fortune, justice, and the way we poor mortals deal. So, to see how Boethius' literary coping mechanism bridged the gap from the classical world and became one of the most iconic and widely read books of the medieval era, let's do some history. Born Anicius Manlius Severinus Boethius in around 480 AD, B-Man grew up in quite possibly the weirdest time yet seen in European history. The last Roman emperor in the West had just been deposed 4 years earlier, yet nobody would really have registered that change, as this post-imperial society was in many ways just as meaningfully Roman as it was before the emperor got the boot. Across religion, language, or literal boundaries of state, life in 480 was closer to 380 AD than 380 was to 280. Western Rome had spent well over a century as a Christian culture, primarily Latin-speaking and politically detached from the Greek-speaking East. Rome had changed, massively and irrevocably, but it had done so slowly. So even with a Gothic king in charge of Italy, the Senate and people of Rome still trundled on. And Boethius saw himself as no less Roman than the classical thinkers, statesmen, and poets he idolized. So that's his world, but who's the man? Well, Boethius was born and raised in the patrician nobility, he trained in philosophy and literature from a young age, and was well placed to enter politics as a member of the Senate, or, like his own father, the most esteemed rank of consul. With good old talent and a pinch of royal favor, he accomplished all this and more. In 505, Boethius became a senator, then consul in 510 at the age of 30, and was so consistently favored by King Theodoric that in 522, Boethius' two sons were made co-consuls with lavish fanfare, and that same year, Bigai got promoted to Magister Officiorum, the head of civil administration and the rightest hand of man's to the king himself. Minus the part about best pals with a Gothic king, that career path would look familiar to someone right out of the Republican era. And this was one of a few notably old-school qualities to Boethius, as while he was certainly Christian, he prided himself on knowledge of ancient Latin poetry, his command of rhetoric, and his ability to speak Greek. Back in the old days, every educated Roman was bilingual in Latin and Greek, but as the East and West calcified over the 300 and 400s, fewer and fewer people on both sides of the Mediterranean retained that multilingual talent, to the point where historians are unsure whether Boethius took some unrecorded study trip to the Greek-speaking East, or if he somehow taught himself all the way up to translator proficiency. Whichever the case, translate he did, as Boethius spent his time outside statecraft conducting a systematized translation of Aristotle and Plato from Greek into Latin. Of course, back in the day, there was no need for a Latin Plato. If you cared enough to read the Republic, you already knew the Greek to crack open the original. Why read a worse version of it? Yet, times changed, and he recognized that these texts could be fully lost to the Latin-speaking world without good translations. So he set himself an ambitious program to produce a full Latin catalog of Aristotle, then Plato, full commentaries, then analysis about where the two differed. If completed, big if, we'll get to it, this would have been one of the most substantive preservation initiatives in all of antiquity. This kind of hoist typically demands whole teams of scholars, like those who translated Plato and Aristotle from the original Attic Greek into the Koine dialect, and later in the Islamic world where classical texts got translated into Arabic at the Baghdad House of Wisdom. This was one guy! No, he didn't finish it, but God, it's so admirable that he cared enough to try. So why didn't he finish it? Well, like any well-connected Roman, Boethius eventually found out that power can be fickle, and sometimes it straight up kills you. Now, on paper, Boethius was accused of making overtures to the Eastern Emperor in a plot to depose King Theodoric, which, given he was in regular contact with diplomats and theologians from the East, has something to it, but the more likely explanation is that his attempts to root out state corruption succeeded mainly in aggravating that corruption against him, and he was denounced falsely to the king. If true, he would be in good company, because getting sandbagged for being annoying is verified Socrates behavior. Rare and esteemed company. Whichever the case, in 522, he and his two sons were on top of the world. A year later, he was languishing in a prison cell, and the next year, he was dead. But that last year, as he awaited execution, he composed what would become his masterwork. The Consolation of Philosophy is, at its core, a first-person account of Boethius getting over himself, starting from the all-too-real premise of him stuck in prison lamenting his misfortune, but diverging from historical reality with the apparition of a ghostly figure who introduces herself as Lady Philosophy, the personified spirit of thinking about stuff. She's here to heal his weary, wounded soul, and by God, she'll spend the runtime of the text working Boethius through it. What we have here, in classic Platonic style, is a dialogue between Boethius and Lady P. Yet, beyond pure prose, the Consolation alternates prose with poetry, following the classic Broadway rule that when you can't speak, you sing. So on structure alone, Boethius takes the best way to write philosophy and improves it by making it 50% poem by volume. So he is simultaneously a madman and absolutely brilliant. But what's the actual thrust of the book? What is Lady Philosophy's angle, and how does she get Boethius out of the dumps? It starts with a better understanding of fortune. B-Man is sad that life was good but turned crap, but philosophy reacquaints him with the allegory of the Wheel of Fortune, whose very nature is to turn constantly, humbling the mighty, elevating the lowly, on and on, this too shall pass, the wheel is always turning. Boethius understands conceptually that it's normal for fortune to shift, but it doesn't make him feel any better, and it's not like the wheel's gonna turn fast enough to get him out of this mess. What he needs is to transcend his circumstances, and philosophy provides. This is where classical reason and Christian faith begin to blend. She tells him that all people seek happiness, but go looking in the wrong places. Power, wealth, fame, they seem appealing, but they're subject to that jerk-face wheel and therefore cannot be a true source of happiness. Rather, one's own virtue is internal to them and fully in their control. But also, on the far opposite end, God is above all that transient nonsense. So the genuine rhetorical swerve Boethius arrives at is that God is not just a good thing that Christians are glad exists, but God is also the Platonic concept of goodness itself, and the way to arrive at it is to cultivate virtue. So being good, regardless of how happy or horrible the material circumstances, unifies the soul directly with God, and that, so Lady Philosophy argues, is a source of happiness that cannot be broken. Virtue is insulated from fortune while God is above it, so they reinforce each other and each is the root to the other. Boethius likes that logic, but struggles to wrangle God alongside fortune or against the perpetual problem of free will. The ensuing discussion is pretty in the sauce, but likewise plays out in this dialogue format to conclude with Boethius feeling a lot better about himself. His virtue is his path to God, and no prison can keep him from goodness itself. It does not save him, yet by this point he's transcended the sadness that needed saving at all. Shortly after finishing the Consolation, Boethius was executed as he knew he would be, but this genuine masterpiece of philosophy became, second only to the Latin Vulgate Bible, the most widely read book in Europe for the next half millennium. When so much of philosophy can be esoteric and fussy and, yes, extremely pretentious, there's something so beautifully human about what Boethius is doing here. He was distraught, wrongfully imprisoned, taken from his family, and stopped from translating the works that meant so much to him. Yet he used philosophy to save himself. Because what truly gets me is how, in order to write this book in real life, Boethius first did all of this himself. He worked through the logic, escaped despair, and found solace within his virtue and his God. Then, in writing it down, he had the humility to give Lady Philosophy all the credit. I can run through tangents about how Boethius combines classical and Christian ideas into the first truly medieval work of literature, or how this book maintains an upsettingly timeless sense of, wow, this sucks real bad, and I have to believe virtue is its own reward, or I'm gonna fucking lose it. Both of those are true, but man, the Consolation is as much a feat of philosophy as it is one of sheer human will. This life bullshit is hard, but as Boethius masterfully proves for us, humans are harder.